I want to talk to Paul Benedict Rowan. Well, he was Paul Rowan before he got the Benedict put in. Firstly, where did the Benedict come from? Was it always there?
Yeah, it's always been there. Yeah, that's why I was christened by my parents, Paul Benedict Rowan.
There's nothing
wrong
with Benedict.
I could go on further. I could give you the other four or five names, but no, I decided just to stick with the first two.
It's just that I'm around long enough to remember the team that Jack built, which was Paul Rowan, of course, which was your other, that other great piece of work, which was hugely successful. And of course, now, with his passing, I suspect many people will want to get a go at that book again. And again, with that, you went behind the scenes. You told a great story in that book. You must have been thrilled back in the day when that came out.
Oh, gosh, that was, 1994.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a bit of an epic experience, all right. Well, I did put a hell of a lot of effort into writing that book, and then there was a massive storm when it was published, and it was a weird experience, I suppose. But I think eventually people who read the book sort of saw the merit in it, and you know, I think it's matured well with time, that one, Marty.
Absolutely, absolutely. And
I hope the same can be said of this book. On the Paul Benedict thing, it's a little bit of fun, I suppose.
That's very posh.
I just kind of wanted to slightly separate my persona a bit.
I know.
It's a tad pretentious.
It's not pretentious.
I hold my hands up to that.
I could be Martin John Whelan if I wanted to be. Don't be silly. Listen, there's nothing wrong with it. Now we better make the point. Here's the thing. That was that book then, and this is this book now. There is a book called Making Ryan's Daughter. Now, the thing about Ryan's Daughter is, I know, for example, because it's a film that was released in 1970, that it's one of those great films in terms of David Lean's career. It's a great film in terms of Ireland. My mother would have always said it was probably one of her top three films. So we know that it had a huge influence. What made you decide to write Making Ryan's Daughter, The Myths, Madness and Mastery?
Yeah.
But what was it? Have you a link with someone from there or someone from Kerry? What is it? What is the link?
Well, I suppose, I do have a link with Kerry, a strong link in the sense that I suppose I've been going down there all my life, really, you know, to the various peninsula, touring around. And when Ryan's Daughter was made, I would have been six, I suppose. And I was hearing these stories about all the Hollywood stars down in Kerry glamming up the place and you know, going to this sort of the only good restaurant in town, which was actually not in Dingle, which was over there in Glenbay on the next peninsula, Ernie Evans's place at the Towers Hotel.
Yeah,
they used to sort of all drive 50-60 miles over to Glenbay to get a good meal and then come back. So those kind of stories just captured my imagination.
Of course, the glitter of all that, of course. That's Ernie, who had Ernie's in Dublin. It's the same Ernie, isn't it?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I know he was a Welsh man. He was a very fine restaurateur, as I understand it, himself and his wife, and they had an excellent wine cellar.
Right.
You know, they were great hosts, apparently. And so that was one of the kind of things that made Glenbay. But Dingle at the time didn't really have anything like that. They had the Skellig Hotel there and Benner's Hotel.
Yes.
But other than that, I think there was virtually no restaurants in Dingle back in 1970.
Exactly.
It was really just a kind of a declining market town, fishing port.
All of a sudden, you get David Lee and Robert Mitchum, Trevor Howard, Christopher Jones, John Mills, Leo McCarran, and Sarah Miles. Merciful hour.
Oh, wow, yeah, what a cast.
Wasn't it?
Yeah,
it
I mean, not to mention some of the crew who were fantastically colourful personalities, like Eddie Fowley. I mean, the prop man was just a legend. He ended up dating a local girl and they went back to Spain and married and everything. A fantastic romantic story.
Gorgeous.
The whole reason why they chose Dingle is kind of bizarre.
Why did they?
A mixture of reasons. Well, I think you can't underestimate the role that the writer Robert Bolt played in the whole thing. This is the guy who wrote Man for All Seasons and, you know, was one of the top playwrights of the 60s. He himself was a teacher, knew all about Irish history, knew all about the 1916 rising, and Lean and himself were very kind of interested in the First World War. Lean was a Quaker, pacifist, so they were very kind of anti-war, but quite kind of pro-British at the same time. They wanted a kind of a story. Obviously, it's based on Madame Bovary, the French novel, but they didn't want to do it in France, so they moved it. They were going to choose either India or Ireland. Ireland won the day because they had a big crew of expertise coming over from England to make the film, which it was obviously a huge logistical task. And bizarrely enough, it meant that Sarah Miles could play the lead role because she wouldn't go anywhere without her dogs. So she drove over with her husband and their four dogs, and they set up outside Dingle there in Fermoil House. And there it just got crazier and crazier, frankly.
And David Lean, they built a village.
Yeah, they built a village. They
Unreal.
Built a village, indeed. I mean, the thing about the Lean was sort of at the height of his powers at the time.
He was coming off an incredible run of success from Bridge on the River Kwai, which was the late 50s, through to Lawrence of Arabia, through to Dr. Zhivago. They were massive, massive hits. Mm. Between them, 19 Oscars. You know, he was the biggest director in the world. He always kind of did a kind of a big set piece construction thing to go with his films. If you... Obviously, the bridge in the River Kwai speaks for itself.
Well, the bridge.
You know, elephants. Yes, indeed. Lawrence of Arabia, you know, he built a lot of those kind of desert towns in Spain.
Yes. And Zhivago is full of these places. You go, my God.
Yeah, well, Zhivago, he built the streets of Moscow north of Madrid. One of the biggest sets ever in the history of movie making. So yeah. It kind of became a kind of a, almost like a kind of an expected thing of David Lean.
That's right. He'll build us a town.
And they used to bring a lot of publicity around it. So they went ahead and built this village up on that little, sort of a small mountain outside Dingle. As people like Neil Tobin, one of the Irish actors, pointed out, you know, no Irishman would ever build a village up there. You know, exposed to the elements, you know, tearing in from the Atlantic. So Lean was very conscious. It allowed him to work in a very controlled environment. Except for the weather,
which is its own story. But you talk about you talk about madness in the book. Now I was fascinated about Robert Mitchum, who is. But before we get to Robert Mitchum and what he was growing at the back of the house, he was saying, and can I ask you a question? What did you make of David Lean? David Lean was married 6 times. Does that suggest a difficult man? Do you think?
Oh wow! Well, it was said of him that he married his lovers when men would have been divorcing them. He tended to marry them, you know. Yeah. I know that sounds rather crude, but that's what was said about him. Like, he kind of married women when perhaps he should have already been at the end of the relationship with them.
He had a reputation, allegedly.
And this is what he says, you know.
Yes.
He needed a new woman every time he made a film because it gave him this incredible energy, creative energy. So when he made Lawrence of Arabia, he suddenly started going out with the continuity girl on the film.
They,
frankly, Marty, they were making love all night and then he was filming all day. So, you know...
Such great stamina.
I know. I mean, it's...
I know. It's other people's lives. So, I know,
He was a creature of his time. That's it. He was married to an Indian woman when he was making Ryan's Daughter, who was never on the set. He was there with his girlfriend, Sandy Hoats.
I see.
Yeah, who he'd met in India when he was supposed to be overseeing his wife. And that is one of the actual creative sparks for Ryan's Daughter, a 20-year-old woman who was a third of his age, and he suddenly felt that he was going to make a movie about Gandhi. Instead, he turned around and there was stars, there was love in his eyes, and he went and made Ryan's Daughter instead.
Right.
You know, because Bolt had just met Sarah Miles, and Sarah was about 18 years younger than Bolt. Bolt's marriage had broken up and he was in bits. Then he met Sarah Miles and he wanted to make a film to make Sarah a star. And the actual genesis of the film is one of the most interesting parts of the movie.
Mm.
It's nothing to do with Ireland. It was all based in Italy where they wrote the movie and India. So you've got this extraordinary geographical side to the whole film.
Yeah.
Without blowing my own trumpet too loudly, this book nails that story, and it's a fascinating story as to actually how the film came about.
Well, we talk about the cast, and we were talking about some of the members of the cast, and I'm particularly talking now about John Mills, who plays Michael, and he is the one person with all the brilliance of the film, the one person to go ahead of the stars who were in it, and he wins an Oscar. He wins an Oscar for his part in the film. What was the reaction of the locals to the crowd? You mentioned the restaurant earlier on, which is fascinating. But what was the reaction of the locals to all the hubbub that was going on? We're talking about a part of Ireland that in the summer is very busy and is not in other times. What was it like, did you discover, for the locals when they had all this activity going on?
I don't think they could really believe their eyes and ears of what was happening. You know, you speak to guys like Tom Fitzgerald, who's now passed away, you know, who was a senator down there. He ran the local hardware store. I mean, he would tell you that he was on the verge of going out of business. The emigration, of course, was rampant out of Dingle. There was a population there, about 1,200. They were surviving on state handouts and a little bit of farming, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. There was a lot of bartering going on. There was money coming in from emigrants from the United States. So just came out like a bolt out of the blue. What was their reaction? Their reaction was to get stuck in and make the most of it, you know, while it lasted. Yeah. You know, and there was a wonderful love affair, really, between the makers of Ryan's Daughter and the local people. I mean, for all the difficulties with the weather and no restaurants and all the kind of pampering that these people would have been used to, they loved living in Dingle, which is what effectively they were doing. They loved the quirkiness of the place and they loved the local people. The local people just kind of embraced the whole project. You know, they were making money they'd never even heard of before, as drivers or as cleaners or as building the village or even as extras, as stand-ins. Everything, you know, just it was like Ryan's Daughter became the government of Dingle, they said. But, you know, I know it sounds a bit twee, but the crew and the actors loved the fact that they could go in to buy a loaf of bread in the bakers and that they might get offered a pint of Guinness while they're in there.
Excellent.
It really was a genuine kind of a different kind of world for everybody. I mean, as far as the crew were concerned, they were going back into the 1930s.
Yes, of course, really a very different world for them to inhabit.
Yeah, I mean, I think Dingle hadn't long had electricity, you know, a TV, there was kind of horse and carts in the street, there were some cars, the port was all silted up, so the fishing industry had kind of really kind of declined. So it was really a place that nobody really held that great hope for until the film arrived.
Incidentally, your access to photographs, I've never seen so many of these photographs. They're amazing that you were able to get access to them. There's one of John Mills rowing out to sea at Dunquin. And of course, that could have turned into a huge tragedy.
I'm not sure, but I think that was a different beach where there was the great disaster that nearly took the lives of John Mills and Trevor Howard. It wasn't so much a storm, Marty. It was just a windy day, and they wanted to film a scene where Mills and Howard come in to the beach on a curragh after fishing. Mm. And they just got caught by a freak wave. It was too stormy. Lean had been warned not to put the actors out there, but he was kind of headstrong and nobody could really tell him what to do. So Mills was quite an accomplished oarsman. He had the oars in his hand, but they got sideswiped by a wave. It's out there in the just off the Blasket Islands. The currents go all over the place. Yeah. It's a really dangerous beach, Cumanall Beach. And just for anybody who goes near that place, be very careful. Yes. Because it's a dangerous, dangerous beach. And don't go messing around on the rocks. Poor old Johnny Mills got concussed. Trevor was shook up. But that wasn't the actual storm. And in fact, they had to go then to South Africa to film that scene. Never got that scene in the can. Mm.
That's right, the storm scene. But the storm scene would frighten the life out of you. It was so incredible when you see it on screen.
They did take humongous risks on that shoot. That was a lot of that was up in Clare, of course.
And I don't want to give too much away, but the thing about Robert Mitchum was he was doing a little bit of horticulture, wasn't he, while he was here?
Yeah, he was, according to at least four or five people. One has to be slightly careful here. He was doing it at the back of his establishment, Milltown House. That was attached to the house or not, I don't. I've never been able to nail it down.
Right.
Because I know that the owners of Milltown House themselves said, no, it didn't. But somewhere in the back, he had constructed a greenhouse in another, in one of the production staff's house. And he was growing his marijuana there, yeah.
That's great.
What he used to do was, he used to say to the electricians, any time that any of the plexiglass that was used for lighting on the film, to sort of filter the light, any time that got scratched, it was completely useless. The slightest scratch, he'd say,
knock that over to my house. I'm putting something up. I need to build a greenhouse. I spoke to the associate producer, Roy Stevens, and Roy said to me that after Robert Mitchum had gone home, it's kind of November 1969, that the local Gardaí paid him a visit and brought him round to show him this greenhouse of dope, basically, and then they burnt it. He said Mitchum got a great kick out of it. He thought it was really funny. I think half out of a sense of mischief, because
he was full of mischief, wasn't he?
He was. Great character, really. Great character, Mitchum. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you can't help but like the guy.
Did you ever see his interview with Michael Parkinson?
And he was a good man. I've seen some of it, at least, yeah.
He didn't answer any questions. Yeah. It's just, he was a messer, I know.
He was a bit moody, so, you know, you had to get him in the right mood. But once he got going, you know, he was a very brilliant raconteur and quite a well-educated guy, and is self-educated. You know, he would have known, like, his dalliance with Christy Brown on Ryan's daughter is one of the best stories in the book, really. One of the best stories connected with Ryan's daughter, how himself and Christy Brown went on a bit of a pub crawl with Robert pushing the wheelchair. So
it's unbelievable.
And I warmed to Mitchum an awful lot. But I thought, you know, he didn't get on that well with David Lean, but I'm full of admiration for that man too.
And you know, when you think about the company that Ryan's daughter is in, Dr. Zhivago, Passage to India, River Kwai, Lawrence of Arabia, and it stands up and stands the test of time. Paul, I love the book. It's a great story, and you've gone to endless bother to research it. How long did it take to put the thing together? Because you're saying you're going down to Dingle since you were a small boy, but how long did you spend putting this together as a story for us to read?
I first did an interview with Sarah Miles in the year 2000.
Right.
Now, that was because she had just brought out a documentary which was shown, and I did a piece at the time for the Sunday Independent about it, actually. And then it just kind of grew from there. I mean, along with the kind of my interest in the film, which we talked about earlier, I then went to also see the producer of the film, who was about 96, 97 in 2000, a guy called Anthony Havelock Allen. And Havelock Allen was fascinating in that he really had his own very strong opinions about why Ryan's daughter didn't work. You know, he was the producer, but he was quite critical of his great friend David Lean for a lot of the choices that Lean made, and he was very critical of Mitchum, and he really sort of said it as he saw it. And he was kind of 97. He was a guy who would have remembered the Roger Casement affair back in 1916. Like, he was that old. He would have been a young man. So he kind of had a feel for the whole Irish issue and everything like that. So then I spoke to him, and then I said, well, listen, there's so much material here. I could really kind of develop this much further. And so I went around. I got a lot of help from people who put me in touch with various crew people, you know, people like John Mills I interviewed, Sarah. I managed to speak to Christopher Jones, which is a book in itself.
Yes, I'd say.
And then the crew. So, you know, it was more kind of a book from the outside looking in on Dingle rather than from the local people talking about that, which has been done quite a lot. This is a kind of an entirely different book about
the genesis of
the movie.
Exactly. And I think you mentioned Anthony Havelock Allen, and he's a fascinating man in his own right. It must have been a great pleasure to be with him, because he, with David Lean, they were involved with Blythe Spirit back in the day. So, like, these guys have great history as well. Yeah. So these were serious players,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, they did. And principally the two Dickens movies,
Great Expectations.
And
Oliver Twist. There you go.
Which really kind of established you know, Lean as a really brilliant director. You know,
formidable force. Yeah.
Particularly Great Expectations. Yeah. So they were a great partnership. Havelock Allen and Lean. They didn't really work together for a long time. When Lean went off to make his spectaculars, when Lean went Hollywood, Anthony Havelock Allen did other stuff. But they got reunited for Ryan's daughter, and Havelock Allen never had such a great payday, so he was very, very grateful to David Lean for
the movie. Did awfully well when you think about it. I was looking it up this morning. Budget of $13 million, and it made 30. So it's financial success, sure. It's a huge success. Listen, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you for sharing the moments with me this morning. I really did enjoy it. And well, I think people should go.
I've been living in London for 30 years or so, around the place. So I've got very fond memories of my youth listening to you, Marty. So,
you're very kind.
You know, in Dublin in the 70s and 80s. So,
and I'm still here.
Pleasure to talk to you.
Well, yeah, it's been a real joy. Thank you.
I hear you're more relevant and as good as ever. So
well,
I get a chance to tune in, I listen.
Well, you're a gentleman.
All right.
Well, Paul, thanks a million. It's Making Ryan's Daughter, The Myths, Madness of Mastery. Paul Benedict Rowan. And what people should do now is pick up the Jack Charlton book with this and make you a fortune. That's what I think. Keep well, my friend. God bless you. And thanks for the chat. Very popular movie in our house, I can tell you that. My daughter Jessica and my mum watching that. Ryan's Daughter, which was it was a good chat, interesting book, Making Ryan's Daughter. That's all that for this morning. I'm taking a few weeks.